Oscar. Oscar's kept for a long time at the Nepenthe clinic after his appointment, talking to various people. He isn't sure that the talking is very helpful for anyone involved. He, for one, feels like a watermelon that has been dropped from a great height. Then, various Nepenthe people stand over him and ask him how he feels about being a smashed watermelon. "I don't know yet," Oscar says. After that, he's sent back to the private hospital, the implication being that he's going to stay at this hospital until he bloody well does know what he feels about it. Not that anyone put it like that. Oscar doesn't mind the hospital, though. He cries in his room. Then he chats at the salad bar to rich people with drug problems and eating disorders. Then he cries in his room again. Sometimes he cries at the salad bar. Nobody minds. After a couple of days, he's meant to go back to Nepenthe for more appointments. They send a black car for him after breakfast, and he gets in. But as soon as he's out of the gates of the hospital, Oscar decides he's had enough of being in things. The dim, broken lighting of Marrakesh Airport, the processed air of the plane, the hooting brightness of Gatwick, the clinic, the hospital, the cars, enough. "I need fresh air," he says to the driver. The driver isn't sure about this. He says something about Oscar needing to be under observation. "Yeah, I know," Oscar says. "You lot want me in, but I need to be out." The driver says the concern is that Oscar isn't ready to be out, that at this stage Oscar might not be exactly stable enough for a stroll around the town. "But," says Oscar, "you can't actually stop me, can you?" "Well, no," said the driver. Which is how Oscar, unready, unstable, ends up having a little stroll around Crow's Hill. The town is very pretty. Well-behaved children sitting in the coffee shops with their parents, watching cartoons on tablets. Well-behaved dogs slyly cocking their legs against the Tudor buildings. Interesting-looking clock tower, trees, a post office, a school playground with an empty set of swings. Oscar stops. The feeling of not has just come back to him. No to everything. Oscar was going to kill himself before he heard about the trial, he remembers. He could definitely have killed himself since. The world was his oyster when it came to ways to die. He'd stood on high buildings and bridges and cliff edges. He'd had unsupervised access to heroin, Valium, sleeping pills. Rows of razors in the pharmacies. Rows of knives in department stores. Stolen cars, brick walls. But he didn't do it. In that sense, Nepenthe had worked. Oscar wonders if that longing for not would come back. He searches for it gingerly. He remembers how it felt, like he can remember how being high felt without actually being high or wanting to be high. But the feeling itself isn't here. Or, to be precise, it isn't here at this moment. There's no way to tell how long that will last, or what will happen the next time he's unhappy. Well, he'll get to that. And on the plus side, he's found out that he isn't such a bad guy. His biggest fear was that he'd done terrible things. And it turns out he'd never intentionally hurt anybody at all. This is a good thought. He tucks it into his body, like a penguin with an egg. He could sing it. Head back, beak up, penguin style. "People of Crow's Hill, I, Oscar Levy, have no idea what's going on or who I am, but I have never tried to hurt anybody." That'd go down well. When Oscar gets to the main square of the town, he sees two parents swinging a four-year-old boy in school uniform between them. This makes him cry. He tries to keep his face the same so that people passing hopefully won't notice the tears streaming down his face and dripping into his collar. He can't do much about the tears, though. They won't stop. In the end, he buys a newspaper, sits down on a bench, and pretends to be immersed in the news as he cries. After a while, he realizes that between the bouts of crying, he's feeling something else. Feeling what? But come on. Oscar knows exactly what this feeling is. He just isn't sure he should be feeling it right now. This wonder. This happiness. Taking its turn with the memory of his mother sinking through the water. Or the memory of what he imagined, because he never saw her, did he? She didn't get smaller and smaller. She didn't wave. She didn't mouth anything. Goodbye, Oscar. I love you. Go. He bends his head over the newspaper again. But then he looks up, and the day comes over him and says, "Look at me. I'm so beautiful, Oscar. Look." His father's face, taken violently away from him. The wonky cutout of the windscreen, like a cartoon pow. Bang! His dad's speech bubbles. The beautiful day. The calmness of his mother's face, knowing she was heading downwards to die. The day. He wishes that beauty and horror would get themselves straight, or at least take longer turns in his brain. While all this is going on, people are walking past Oscar without paying him much attention. They've got their own thoughts to wrestle with, he supposes. He wonders if any of them are in the same position as Oscar himself, but then, even if they were Nepenthe clients, they wouldn't be quite the same sort of client as Oscar. For most of them, it was just fucking and fuck-ups. When they visited for their refund, they'd get back a manageable, bite-sized chunk of time. But Oscar has been given a whole childhood, a heap of childhood, an avalanche of childhood. He can't work out what to do with it yet. After a while of crying, he thinks that maybe the driver was right and Oscar isn't quite stable enough to be out yet, that maybe he ought to head back to the clinic. That's when it happens. Bang! For a second, Oscar is back in the water. Then he's in the street, wondering if that noise just happened in that moment or if he's starting to fall apart, if the fresh air he'd been inhaling has undone something and now his brain is dissolving into soup. But the sound of it is fading in the air, still, and the people around him are looking around too, alarmed. Oscar walks to the end of the road, where people seem to be gathering. It's hard to see in the sun. He sees a lorry, stopped at a strange angle in the road, a woman running past towards a figure that appears to be kneeling down right in the middle of the road. A few other figures in the distance are moving towards them, running. Oscar stands a little distance away from the man who had been hit by the lorry, the woman holding him. He watches the people trying, hopelessly, to save the man's life. There's a puddle of blood around the man, on the tarmac, sending out long, questing rivulets. There are cracks spreading across the windscreen of the lorry. Oscar wonders if this is really happening, or if he's gone mad. He's able to move backwards a few steps and sit down on a wall. That's all he can do. He knows, somewhere, that he ought to find his driver again, hand himself back in to Nepenthe. He just doesn't feel able to move. The heat and electricity have seeped out of his body, leaving an inert mass that sits and watches. Time passes without him. An ambulance arrives. Police arrive. The dead man is taken away. The lorry is driven away by someone who isn't its original driver. The driver is taken away, a tiny person emerging from that large, brutal block shape, tiny and crying. The police talk to the woman wrapped in the blanket. The crowd gradually breaks up, draws away. The woman moves away from the police officers. She's holding up her hand, palm out, fingers up, the signal for enough. No. She sits down on a wall of her own. The police are still around her, taping off the area, but she's alone among them. Then she looks up and looks at Oscar. They're not that far apart. She can see him clearly, but she squints at him. Then her eyes widen. Like she knows him. Oscar is startled. With it, he finds he can move again. Like this contact is a line thrown out in the water. He takes hold of it. He doesn't think. He's not there yet. He walks over. "Oh, Levy?" she says. "Really?" She sounds disbelieving. She's small, with long dark hair coming out of what once must have been a neat knot. She looks at him calmly, but there's a refusal in her calmness, as if he's part of a bad dream, and she's not going to panic, but she's not going to accept this dream figment either. "Oscar," he says. "But I don't know you." "No, you don't," she says. She looks down. The refusal drops away, and she just looks blank. Oscar realizes she's shaking. His head is back now. It comes to life like a screwed-in bulb. He finds he's able to think. "This woman," he thinks, "needs my help." The idea of help feels audacious. The idea of Oscar being substantial enough for someone else to be supported by him. But he gives her his hand. She holds on to it tightly. Her own hand is covered in blood, but she doesn't seem to notice. A police officer has come over. She looks at Oscar warily. "We're going to take you home, Noor," she says to the woman. "Do you have someone there, or someone that can be with you?" "No," Noor says. She's still gripping Oscar's hand. "Do you want me to come?" Oscar asks her. Noor is silent for a moment. "Do you know this man?" the police officer asks her. "She knows me," Oscar says. "I don't know her. I don't know why that is." The police officer looks confused. "He's coming," Noor says. Oscar makes a cup of tea in Noor's empty kitchen. Her whole house looks empty. It would resemble a corporate let, except corporate lets have pictures on the walls. Noor's walls are as white as those of the clinic. The floor is polished wood. In the large sitting room, there's a sofa, a table and chairs, and a television, and nothing else. Noor sits on the middle of the big sofa, wearing the bathrobe he found upstairs. In silence. Oscar brings the tea in and hands it to her. "Thank you," Noor says. He's relieved to hear her speak. She takes a sip. "Hot tea," she says. Then she starts to cry. Oscar watches her crying with approval. He'd been worried by her calm blankness. Grief, from what he's seen, is seasonal. First, everything is frozen solid. Then it thaws, and the ice rains down, water crashing everywhere. Then later, the leaf buds start to appear. or so Oscar hoped. He'd wondered, from her rigidity and her obvious force of will, if Noor might be the kind of person who just wouldn't ever defrost. He shivers. It's not just his own analogy, it's cold in here. There's a log-burning stove with a heap of dusty wood and a basket next to it. He looks around for some matches.
You don't need to stay, Noor says. I just had to get rid of the police. I'm actually fine.
But you're crying, Oscar says. She makes a dismissive gesture. But your friend, Oscar says.
I don't actually know him, Noor says. He was a patient at the clinic. Not my patient.
And that's how you know me?
Yes.
Well,
not officially. Your access denied. Raza. I don't know what that is, and I'm definitely not meant to talk to you about it.
Oh, really? Oscar says. So it's a secret inside your company, too. They really like keeping secrets, don't they? Well, I don't care if you want to talk about it. I mean, we'd both get in trouble, probably. I think they'd make me give the money back. Though personally, I'd rather talk than have a lot of money. But I wouldn't want you to get in trouble.
Trouble, Noor says slowly.
Her tears, which have been dropping steadily, seem to gather up and overwhelm her. She puts her head in her hands. Oscar makes the fire. When he opens the door of the stove, a few small pieces of paper drift out. He picks up the largest one. It's black at the edges. It says, "All there are endless questions." He fishes it out and puts it to one side. When the fire is burning and Noor has wiped her face and stopped crying, he says, "This is beautiful. Why did you burn it? Was it an accident?" He holds it out and she reads it. She frowns.
"How on earth is that beautiful?" she says.
"Isn't it saying you have to keep asking questions? That sometimes you get an answer, sometimes you don't, and you'll never really know anything beyond all doubt, but you never stop asking questions. The questions are the point. Isn't that it?"
Says Noor. "If you like."
"If you don't want it, could I keep it?" Noor rubs her face. She looks baffled.
"Sure," she says.
Then she puts down her empty mug and falls asleep. Oscar puts the piece of paper in his pocket. He waits around for 10 minutes in the bare room, filled by the sound of Noor's low, regular breathing. Oscar's got himself a phone now, one attached to his own name, so he writes down his number on a notepad and puts it on the table. He writes, "It's okay that you know me." Then, in case that's too ambiguous or maybe even creepy sounding, adds, "i.e., we can be friends." Then he lets himself out of the house and walks back down towards the town centre to find his driver, who is probably asking a lot of questions of his own right now, uppermost of which is, "Where the fuck is Oscar?" Oscar's out of the private hospital now, living in a flat with his cousin Nat in Islington. He was worried that she'd only offered him the room because she felt obliged to, and was probably dreading his arrival. A blast from the bleak past of not. But when he arrived, his uncle and aunt were there too, and they'd hung up a sign that said, "Welcome back, Oscar," in coloured letters, and there was a cake. They all cried. Leaf buds, he thinks. Oscar's enjoying living with Nat. She remembers his parents and often references them in a way that makes it feel like they're still alive. Just not right here, at this moment. He and Nat both like Monty Python and the 100-year-old walrus at the Horniman Museum.
They have parties and make paellas for people. Oscar's accumulating new traits every day. He still goes back to Nepenthe to talk to Carini di Oliveira. Oscar likes talking to Carini. She's not very professional, despite being a high-up doctor at Nepenthe. Their meetings happen at the London offices now because the Nepenthe clinic in Crows Hill just got shut down for mysterious and apparently shady reasons that nobody at Nepenthe will talk about. Even Carini, who normally swears and laughs and makes jokes, speaks as carefully as the others when Oscar asks her about it. She uses the same words as the others too. Alleged misconduct. Fraud inquiry. Under investigation. More information in due course.
Is it to do with Raza? Oscar asks her.
No, Carini says. Something else.
So, Raza, that's all still a secret?
Yes, Carini says. She rolls her eyes. Though, who knows for how long? There are a lot of people who can't really be said to have given informed consent to their confidentiality agreements.
Because they're mad, like me, Oscar says.
Mentally ill, Carini says. And you're not mentally ill, which means you also have to keep it to yourself when I accidentally say too much, like I did just now. Oscar taps his nose.
No problem, he says. Doctor-patient confidentiality, right?
Carini laughs.
So were they mentally ill before they signed up to Raza, or afterwards?
Not before, Carini said.
But that doesn't mean they were okay. People who sign up to a trial to remove childhood memories don't tend to be. Bereaved people like yourself, abuse survivors, a lot of emotional damage. Then, after the trial, there was a high rate of mental illness, as you would guess. As, some might argue, Nepenthe should have guessed.
How many of us were there? Oscar says. Us Raza patients. Carini looks at him for a while.
Oscar, I'm not going to regret telling you this, am I? She says.
I won't tell anyone, Oscar says. I just want to know what happened to them. Do you know?
Listen, Oscar, the Raza trial did have good intentions. It was hideously wrong-headed and the doctor behind it was sacked, but it was originally supposed to help people.
So did it? Did it help anyone?
Not really. There were about 60 participants, aged between 18 and 40. The older people were, the worse they were affected by the procedure. Of the total, I think maybe around 10 are missing, unaccounted for. 20 more live in institutions. Roughly 20 are working or leading relatively independent lives. They have varying degrees of mental health issues. Some of those people will be offered the restoration.
What about the other 10? Oscar asks. Carini hesitates.
She has an expressive face, but Oscar realizes he's never actually seen Carini look angry. So he can't say for sure if the look that appears momentarily on her face is anger. It's just a guess.
They're dead, aren't they? Oscar says.
She nods.
I'm sorry, Oscar.
It's okay, he says.
Well, not really.
How are you feeling?
He thinks about it.
I feel... It's like I was on the edge of a cliff, and I nearly fell off, but I didn't. But thinking about it now, it takes a while to stop feeling shaky. It's frightening, thinking how close it was.
Yes, Carini says.
And then I think about them,
Who?
The others. The people who fell.
Later.
Are you glad you got your memories back? Carini asks him. Or is it too soon to know?
Is Oscar glad?
Is it better?
The windscreen gaping onto the receding sky like a shocked mouth. Bang! His dad toppled forward on the sticky dashboard, his mum falling away behind him. Down, down, darkness, calm.
Yes, he says.
Yes. But yes, yes, it's true. All I wanted was to be with people, Oscar says to Carini. Have friends, girlfriends, but I was scared to, because I didn't know what I was. I mean, I didn't know if I'd done something bad, or if I might do something bad in the future. I couldn't explain anything. I couldn't promise anything. You know, a girl once told me I was like an abstract painting, just swirls, no real picture. Anyway, now I might be able to see what the picture is.
Carini frowns.
Not very fair to abstract art, or to you, she says.
I can see how I was quite annoying, Oscar says. She probably didn't mean it about the art.
I don't see that there's anything wrong with swirls, Carini says. And I'm not sure about the quest to find out what you are. A lot of people don't think that's even possible.
I actually remembered the other day that I took LSD once, Oscar says. Sorry.
Don't apologize to me, Carini says. I've done it myself. It was great.
I don't recommend it for you, though. Not at this time. Anyway, please go on.
I was 14, and I thought it would make my math class more interesting. Also, I was hoping it might kill me. Anyway, in the middle of maths, I vanished. My body didn't vanish. My friends had to hide it in the cupboard because I was unresponsive. But I vanished. I remember panicking at first, and then there was no me to feel panicked, if you see what I mean. I can't really describe how that felt. It was beautiful. When I remember that, I think I probably am a load of swirls. But so's everyone else. We're all just swirls, pretending to be real pictures.
That sounds very Buddhist, actually, Carini says.
Maybe I could go on a Buddhist retreat, Oscar says. Go to Nepal or Tibet, even. Live in a monastery. Do they let troubled Westerners stay in monasteries to learn about Buddhism?
Yes, says Carini, to the point that it's now something of a cliche.
Excellent, Oscar says. Maybe I can ask them about my acid trip.
Asking questions, he thinks. His hand nearly moves towards the pocket with his wallet in and the folded up sooty bit of paper. He stops it. He hasn't told Carini about Noor. He knows he's not meant to know her. She has something to do with the Nepenthe clinic being shut down. Not that Oscar gives a shit about that. He likes Noor. If she ever calls him, he'll go and see her.
Let's finish our sessions first, though, Carini says.
Oh, sure, Oscar says. There's no rush. I want to stay in London for a while. I actually want...
Is there any way I could meet any of the other Raza people? I was thinking maybe it would be helpful for them, in some way.
She thinks about this.
I don't know, Oscar. Nepenthe probably won't like it, but I'll look into it. I can't promise you anything. I'll do my best, though, Thanks. Don't worry, it's not just them I want to meet. I'd like to make some friends. The lifelong type. See my aunts and uncles and cousins. Maybe get a girlfriend.
That all sounds good to me, Carini says. He sits back in his chair and smiles. His hand has crept up to his neck, his mother's necklace. It's always warm, this necklace. He never thought of that before. It's warm because of Oscar's own blood, twitching and roaring and singing so close to the surface of the skin. There's blood in him. Of course there is. The same thing that's in everyone else. He smiles. He thinks, just like everyone else.